bread of sorrow. Woe to the downpressed, they'll eat the bread of sad tomorrow. Woe to the downpressed, they'll eat the bread of sorrow. The legend himself, Robert Nesta Marley, who this past May 11th died 38 years ago at the age of 36. He had a very rare form of skin cancer that invaded almost every part of his body. But his work lives on. And I keep saying all the time, when you do good work, it lives on. Even in the world of music, no matter what it is, if you do it to the best of your ability, it would withstand the test of time. So that was titled Guiltiness. It's from the Exodus album, and that was produced in 1977. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and lots happening, lots of crazy things happening. And, you know, I had to remind myself to return to my old mentality. What's my old mentality? I am not going to have these people drive me crazy. I'm not going to allow it to happen. So that's been my mentality for many years. I used to take things on in such a way, you know, I'd get almost sick with worry and anger about the way things were going. And you can see so clearly from even so far away, you can see so clearly what is happening. And yet it's like pushing molasses uphill in winter with a rake. That's the speed at which things are happening. And they're not good things. We have a general unwillingness in the nation to accept or even to recognize that our leadership at almost every single level is badly compromised, and that we shouldn't expect all these ideals. No, that's not going to happen. So we have to retool, and this is one of the things I think as a strategy we have to adopt. Of course you have to fight. Of course you have to resist. But you can't lose track of the sensible approach, too, is to understand that, in a sense, all of this diverts our energy from the things that are vital to us. And, you know, they have all the time to waste. They have all the money to play with. They have all the ways and means to indulge their every whim. You want to start a war? Oh, we have money for that. You want to come up with bizarre concepts and you want to call them policies? You could do that. We have, I mean, we really have to deal with where we are, with the White House, the cabinet. What is this world? It's so surreal. And yet, even as you recognize how bizarre it is, how wrong-headed it is, we are limited, and we can't deny it. We are limited in what we can do. Why? Because the apparatus that we need to respond and respond effectively either isn't there yet. It hasn't been formed. It hasn't been set up. Or it exists, but for all kinds of interesting reasons, people are not ready to activate it. They don't want it put into motion. Not just yet. Of course, I'm talking about Nancy Pelosi. Not just yet. There's a very deep reason why the Democrats cannot actually lead a frontal assault on the Republicans and this errant president. What is it? I don't know. You have as much ammunition as you would ever need, even now. Sure, you could wait and wait and wait until you get more and more, but the fact is, all the experts are saying the same thing. There's more than enough evidence to move. We're not moving. And things are getting worse by the day. They're not getting worse for the, and this is the cute part. No matter which political side you pick, the upper echelons are just fine. Nothing is going to happen to them. They have their pensions. They've got their bonds. They've got their stocks. They're living nicely. They've got their books that are coming out or movies that they're filming. They've got all kinds of projects. They're traveling to Ukraine to scrape up some money over there, or they'll go to some other country and scrape up some money over there as a consultant. They have myriad ways to survive. We are the ones who are not thinking about survival. And yet that should be the number one and the permanent thing that should be on our minds. Our collective survival. It's not happening. And truth be told, we are trusting the wrong people. We are entrusting them with our lives. For them, this is a kind of experience. It will be over at some point. They know that. In the meantime, they're building up their retirement funds. They are developing alternative sources of revenue and income. They're building businesses. They're doing very well, no matter how things work or work out. They're safe. We are not. As Bob Marley just sang, they're the big fish that eat up the small fish. We're the small fish. And we are not responding as if we understand that we are right in the crosshairs. I'll give you an example. So there's this big trade brouhaha between China and the United States. Of course, we know that the conduct of the President of the United States literally forced it to happen, this break in trade talks. And yet the biggest scam is to make us, the people, believe that the trade and the tariffs that they're talking about would be the tariffs that China would charge the United States, and that the United States in turn would charge China. When the fact is, tariffs are to be paid by you and me. It doesn't come out of the government's pocket. So they can dilly-dally all day long. And Trump could talk his nonsense all day long because Everybody knows the truth. They just wouldn't tell us. We are the ones paying the tariffs, not the government. We are the ones being punished, not the government. So when we have a dunderhead like Trump, supposing that he can go into a room with people who have spent years studying and perfecting their analyses of things, and you could just wing it, and you call it policy, they know he's crazy. And then he comes back to the United States, and he has his people situated now that they can go to bat for him as his personal help. Mnuchin of the Treasury, who is supposed to obey subpoenas from Congress, says, I'm not turning over Trump's tax returns to you. He's acting as Trump's personal flack, not as the director of the Treasury. This is a, and they're doing these things in your face, in your face. They have such contempt for the people. They can do these things, they can insult you to your face, and we aren't doing a thing about it because, frankly, we cannot. It's not that we're not able to, it's just that we cannot. And why can't we? Because the Democratic Party is shot to hell, it's falling apart. It has fallen apart. There is no cohesion in that party. And likewise, there's no cohesion in any other party. There is no cohesion among the opposition. So we have a very inferior president still getting away like a champ. He's so smart. He's caused a rift. It's getting wider and wider every day. And we are waiting to see if the Democrats really understand how vital it is for them to unite quickly, come up with a plan quickly, tell the people quickly what they're willing to do and get it done. But like I say, they're not hurting. And they won't be hurting. You think Nancy Pelosi is going to hurt if tomorrow all Democrats get squashed? They got that thing ready. They've got millions stashed away. They belong now, or they're sitting on boards where they're getting additional millions. They're doing very, very, very well. I keep saying the question is about us. Why are we so reluctant to call them out and to take action against them? We should be so busy planning any number of meetings all over the place, in every city. There ought to be planning meetings about how we are going to deal with these cowardly Democrats. They're talking a great game, no action. Oh, yeah, they issued some subpoenas, but then Trump sees these things coming and his advisors. Because as I have maintained from the beginning, Trump isn't running this country. There are people who are running Trump who is running this country. Trump cannot run this country. He is incapable of running this country. He does not have it. He's not qualified. He's not experienced in this level of leadership. He's taking orders from the people who really have money and who tell him, sorry, what they want him to do. And he does that. Why? Because he'll benefit. They'll reward him handsomely. They'll reward his ineffective sons. They'll reward his daughter and his son-in-law and anybody else he wants to throw a couple of million dollars to do questionable things. And they will afford him an extraordinary amount of protection for as long as he needs it. And from the look of things, he'll need it for a long time. He is in bad trouble. So this is why I'm saying I've been sounding the clarion call for a long time now. We've got to understand what's coming down the pike. And it's almost here. It's here already, actually. Many things just have not been enacted 100%, but they've begun it. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting to see when it's going to happen. Rather than saying, we know it's going to happen. And we are totally unprepared. We're totally unprepared. And we are handing them even the excuse to blame us for the fact that we did not react in time. We did not see to our interests. They didn't prevent us from seeing to our interests. It's just that we're not creative enough. We're not smart enough. We're not fast enough. And then we too buy into this psychologically. Well, I'm not starving totally yet. So I'll wait to see what happens. You've been told what's going to happen. You know what's happening already. And it's going to get much, much worse. Okay. So I exhort us to really change gears. Because we don't have very much turnaround time. And when I say we, I don't mean us in the here and now. I'm talking about a couple of generations down the line. We have to go to bat for them now. You haven't seen the devastation yet, but it's coming. When they start shutting down the already bad schools that we have, we'll have no schools. We don't want to discuss health care. We don't want to discuss employment. We don't want to discuss the quality of life in our communities. These things, and I don't mean to just be the preacher of doom. But these things are real. And we are so patiently waiting for somebody to come along and solve the problem. Even our own people are lying to us and refusing to tackle the situation head on. They're giving us all kinds of, the shimmying here and a shimmy there. But they're lying. When Nancy Pelosi says that, we shouldn't tackle We shouldn't tackle Trump right now. Not head on. We should wait because he is self-destructive. He will do it himself. Where do we get this kind of logic and accept it as sensible and normal? People are looking to see the opposition do something, respond like you recognize that the nation, the people that you represent, are in a terrible state, a very precarious state. I'm hearing about all these things about how great the economy is, and so many thousands or hundreds of thousands of jobs being added, and so forth. Okay. So, why is it that we have all these stores, these giant retailers, shutting down their stores? Why is it that we have even small businesses unable to even get started, let alone to maintain their businesses with access to loans and to special accommodations that most businesses, the big guys, have access to? The United States is the leader of the world. And we have people in this country, young people who are illiterate, and that is acceptable. We have an African American Secretary of Housing who used to be a brain surgeon. Go figure. And he does not know the state, the horrid state of housing in the United States, especially public housing. He has no clue. And that's why he was selected, because he has no clue. Funny thing is, he is one of the most educated members of the cabinet. And still can't figure it out. It's staring him right in the face. He's waiting to be told what is happening and what he ought to do. Just cut things, cut programs, hike the rents, throw the people out of subsidized housing, and then privatize it. I mean, do you think that this is something that requires a great deal of insight and education? We know this is happening. We know it's going to happen. We know it's on the books. So, I come back to what we ought to do. And it is so frustrating to me that you just can't get people to safeguard their own stake and move to safeguard their interests. Despite all the talk, you don't have nearly as many people who talk as people who put their noses to the grindstone and try to do something, try to contribute to a solution. And I'm saying, I don't care what the Democratic Party says, or the Green Party, or the Progressive Party, you're not doing a good job. Your whole thing now is getting elected. And here's the funny part. You're depending on the votes of the people who are being squeezed. And you're not standing up for them. We had, I go back to it again, the Congressman Al Green from Texas. How many months? This is since last year. Did he get on the floor of Congress and read off, rattle off a list of articles of impeachment? But I guess he wasn't bright enough to be acknowledged as taking a leadership role in that. Instead, we had somebody working against him, none other than the leader of the Democratic Party, saying, no, let's not go there. Let's sit tight, like she's orchestrating a big football game. Yeah, you can sit tight because you're a multimillionaire, married to a multimillionaire. You have nothing to worry about. He came back several months later and amended his articles of impeachment, adding additional articles of impeachment. He updated it. No response. No response. Now they're talking, well, things are getting hot. We got to take a stand. What stand are you taking? Who are you kidding? You get a couple of subpoenas? Okay, big deal. You could do that after work in your sleep. You have no strategy. You have no plan. You have no contact with the community. You have no vision. And this late in the game, and I say it's late in the game because before you blink, it will be 2020. So if you are not ready now for battle, when will you be ready? If you don't have a plan now, when will you have one? And one that you can translate to the party faithful to say, this is what we're after, and we're going for it, and we need you on board. No, you're not saying that. The Democratic Party under Nancy Pelosi has adopted the attitude of they're the patricians and we are the plebes. We ain't nobody. We should just trust that they can do the job and leave them alone to do it. So I'm very close to signing off completely. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the assumption that people should just hurry up and wait for leadership. I'm exercising my own leadership. And my leadership will be get the hell out of the party and persuade as many people as I possibly can to do the same. We should have no more patience with this party. Not just the Democrats, all the parties that are failing to deal with us directly. I ask, where's the Green Party? What does it have to say about our current situation? Not in the sense of, well, here's what you're going to do. No. No. Those days are done. Those days are over. And the idea that the party can absolutely count on us being so docile, so trusting. We're waiting to see what you tell us to do, and you'll do it. Meanwhile, you have rotten leadership, and you have had years to address it. You have had years to change it. You have had years to amend it, and you haven't, because you are absolutely convinced that people who call themselves Democrats are idiots waiting to be informed as to what the great God on high tells us to do. No, we have to get serious. The first thing we have to do is get rid of you. That's what we need to do. You're not talking to us. You're not dealing with us. Our interests are way down on the totem pole. We have no access to you, no meaningful access to you. And the only access we have is when election time comes around and you are going to tell us what our choices should be. I used to fall for that. Until I stopped voting, I have shared that story with you many times. And I came to that decision in the voting booth. That's when I realized I am not going to put up with this crap. I am not going to be a victim of the charade, the psychological game that they play all the time. If it is that I can't depend on you, if it is that I can't look to you for credible leadership, then certainly I'll use the time and effort and energy to develop it in myself. I'm okay with that. Because, frankly, you haven't done a damn thing that people consider vitally important. What was the greatest achievement? What was your greatest achievement in the last 4 years? You got elected. Well, that's great. Good for your bank account and your status in the community. It has nothing to do with our collective survival. And don't veer away from those two words, collective survival. That's what should guide our every decision. Is it good for the collective survival of us? If it isn't, then we're not interested. I don't want to know, how much more money you're going to make, and your semi-qualified or more, totally unqualified sons and daughters, how much they're going to make. I'm not interested in that. Okay, so I kind of got that off my chest. That was a thing that we have to get serious about, and we have to be prepared that we will be very hard. We have to make hard decisions. And we can't shrink from them. Love you a lot, but you're not the right person for this office. You can't help us. You can't get us to where we need to go. You're sweet and wonderful and stay that way, but this is not what we need you for. All right, I wanted to talk about a subject that is at least, what, 2 weeks old now? And that is the decision by Facebook to remove some people who had been on Facebook for some time. And the reason given was that they are dangerous people. They're dangerous, and Facebook has a responsibility to move preemptively to not afford these people, don't give them space and access to the public. And therefore, they're doing their job because they are licensed by the federal government. They're doing their job in preemptively going after these dangerous people. Well, I think it's very nice that they think so highly of us that they want to be protective of us. But I'm interested in what you are thinking. What do you think is behind all of this and this idea of controlling speech? We have Minister Farrakhan. We have this guy Jones from InfoWars. We have two others that I can't recall. I'm going to look them up now in my notes. But you have this move by Facebook, and quite a few people seem to believe that it's the right thing to do, and that Facebook is doing this in the interest of the nation to stamp out hate and outrageous ideas and to basically observe while they have the right to express an opinion, they do not have the right to cause hysteria or to preach hate. This is the position of Facebook. I want to know what you're thinking about this, because we are going to discuss this in even greater detail, because there's something happening here that nobody's talking about. And it's not about, these hateful people being given the means of access to potentially millions and millions of people and spreading their invective. Oh no, it's much greater than that. I'm wondering whether you have caught on to it yet. So we'll take this little break and come back at 888-874-4888 right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Before we go any further, I want to remind you our date with each other is coming up very soon, and that is on Sunday, May the 26th at the Community Church at 40 East 35th Street between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue in Manhattan. I'll be giving a talk there. It starts at 1 p.m. and we have registration. There's no fee. It's just that I want to know who was there and put the faces to the names. That starts at 12:30. It would be great to see you and to have you bring a friend and to get to the business of building our community, our When I say our community, it's the community that assembles here at 1 o'clock every day, discussing the issues of the day and trading in our open forum of information, opinions, and ideas. So I'm looking forward to seeing you on May the 26th, that's a Sunday, at 1 p.m. for the lecture, 12:30 to register, and we should have a great time. Last year I was there, I was invited by the Global Affairs Committee of the Church. It was extremely emotional for me and for most everybody, I think, because we wouldn't leave the church. It was great. All right, let's get on with our discussion for today. And who do we have up first? Let me see. Hello, Ron?
Yes, from Ron from Connecticut?
Yes, Ron from Connecticut. You're on the air.
I didn't hear the first part. I guess the technicians have to catch up with our issues. Paper ballots. Now, I'm not saying I know everything about what I'm going to mention, but I want people to... And did I greet you personally? I'm so very sorry, Eutrice. I guess
no, you said hello. We're fine with all that. Let's just keep moving because we're running tight on time.
I've heard about blockchain voting. Don't know much about it. I've heard about ranked choice voting, and I understand a little about that. And we need those tools implemented to run a coalition government. And the movement that gained no traction at all for the midterm elections was brand new Congress, with everything that implies. On to the next issue.
You know, if you don't mind, because I want to follow up on the two subjects raised today,
yeah,
we can come back tomorrow and tackle your topic, but I want to stay on topic for today.
So what do we do with Congress? That's why I'm saying we just need we've got to get them out of there. We've got to fire them all, and we can.
Well, it's not a case of firing them all, because we can't be so, dogmatic about it. We have to, of course, delineate. There are people who are doing their very best and who are trying their best to represent
fire them all, one clean sweep, Eutrice. Fire them
all. I'm sorry?
Then bring the good ones back in. But, I mean, we have to start from scratch. Nobody's getting that. So brand new Congress.
But, when we talk about things like this, mm-hmm. let's talk within the realm of reality. What can be done? We are near 2020. Given the lack of time that we have, what is feasible? What is possible?
Well,
exactly.
I'd like to just say... it's time for all the mean, nasty people to stop what they're doing. Just let the nice people run things. So what you're saying is, how do you get from point A to that big point B? And I have to refer. I got to go back to Occupy Town Hall. It has to start there.
Yeah, but you're occupying Town Hall, it doesn't do anything.
Well, when they have meetings, bring up certain issues, and then you can pretty much you can filibuster.
No,
you have a bit of a
no, because they own the means of control. You can't do anything. We could
wow.
occupy Town Hall for the next 2 years. It won't change much.
We could occupy space near Town Hall.
No. See, I believe we have to be very serious about our actions, and I don't mean to get anybody upset. We don't have much time. We're getting older. For many of us, time has already gone by.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot act as if we have unlimited time and unlimited resources to accomplish certain goals. My question is, what are those goals? How can we do it? That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's talk tomorrow as well, Ron. Thanks for calling in. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Eutrice?
Okay.
I look forward to Sunday next week.
Me too. I would love it. I'd love to see you.
I'll definitely, it's definitely on my calendar, and I'm definitely going to make every attempt humanly possible to make it. As a friend of mine once said, God willing, and the creek don't rise, I'll be there. Speaking to what you were talking about earlier as far as the banning of certain individuals on Facebook, from Alex Jones to Louis Farrakhan to some other select people that don't come to mind right now, I can't honestly say I agree with all that they say, but I will defend your right to say it. And I don't like what's happening. I don't like the consensus that it's okay to stop somebody from speaking.
Let me ask you, is this a situation of freedom of speech, or is there something else happening here?
Well, I believe it's a situation of freedom of speech, but I also believe it's a situation of public ignorance. I mean, years ago, the public was intelligent enough to ascertain between certain ideas, and no idea should be suppressed. I mean, there are some Machiavellian and perverse ideas, but you've got to be an educated consumer. And the only way that the politics in this country will work to any type of viable means is if people are intelligent. Ideas can be expressed, and points can be expressed. What is your idea of perverse? I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder as well as perversion. But we shouldn't start suppressing people because it's a slippery slope. Once you stop one man from speaking, then you can stop all people from speaking, depending upon your feelings.
I'm going to share with you a whole different way to look at it.
Okay.
And it has very little to do with ideas. Mm-hmm. It has to do with money. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with the role. The wrong people, according to organizations like Facebook, the wrong people are in the right role. Now, Minister Farrakhan may not realize it, or maybe he does. I don't want to assume much. But few people understand that there's about to be a huge break in that world. Right now, Minister Farrakhan and others have access to platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you think you have something to say, you get yourself a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And you agree on a price, and because you pay a particular price for it, the trade-off is you say what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is going to stop, because now these folks need to recognize that what the truth of it is, they haven't been just people on air. They are publishers.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They are publishers. Every installment by any of these people who are said to be dangerous people, any installment that is aired by them, they're no longer on a platform now.
Yes.
They can assert their rights as publishers. And as publishers, they have the right to present what they believe is relevant to their constituencies, just like a newspaper has the right, the presumed right, to cater to the needs of its readers. Or television station has the right as a publisher. Television stations are not just putting stuff out in the ether, they are publishing. And that's one of the things that's going to change dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have a platform, you basically, it's a like pay-per-view. Whoever has the money, come on, and we'll give you some time for the money. But when you are a publisher now, and mm-hmm. you take on that role seriously, you have a division in that world of information dissemination.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be kicked off as easily as that. You mm-hmm. are a publisher. And every NBC is a publisher. Name any television station that you watch every day. They all are publishers. And what they're going to do is to break up this world. It's too democratic with a small d. Mm-hmm. Too many people have access. And the one way they can do it is to persuade people. This is where the ruse comes in. They're telling people they're acting in the interest of, you know, fairness, and they're acting in the interest of what is good for the people. You can't have these hate mongers and whatnot. When you watch television every day, you're watching hate mongers.
I mean, yes.
The way they cover stories. They're no bigger hate mongers than many of the mainstream media. But this is where they're about to make a break. Mm-hmm. They will separate the publishers now, and the publisher club is about to get very, very small and even more powerful. So this is how they're weaning them out. And they're going to be successful at it by putting out a false narrative that they're going after those people who are dangerous to our society. Well, who the heck put you in charge of deciding who is dangerous and who is not?
No,
the New York
I agree.
Post is not dangerous?
I agree. I mean, you know, ideas are not dangerous unless, you know, unless they're acted upon by wrong-thinking individuals. I mean, the whole idea, the media has changed. The accessibility has changed. And now the powers that be are trying to limit the access in the advent of 5G, also in the advent of more ease of the small person to actually access a platform and develop a following with a majority of people to get the message across. It's about control.
Have a platform.
It's about control.
You will pay for it.
Yes.
Okay. So the fees will go up there, but at the same time, there are certain rights and privileges that are assumed that you would have, even on the platform, but you won't have those anymore because they've already indicated they have the power to decide whether you're dangerous or not.
Mm-hmm.
When you are a publisher, you have added clout and protection because the Constitution gives you that protection. This is not just freedom of speech. This is now freedom of the press.
The Fourth Estate.
That's right. And then you get to charge people who may want to appear in the environment that you provide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're talking money. And they're trying to get at this early, get this thing done early. And this is a wonderful explanation that they've come up with, that we're looking out for the larger society here. And we are removing from our midst those people who are hateful, spreading hate, spreading poison, and we don't need them doing that, harming our children.
Whom we deem to be spreading hate, who we deem to be spreading poison, and a method of corporate control over the media. Well, I mean, people got to be aware of what's happening.
Well, I wanted to bring that to your attention because this is a very subtle thing. But it's a big thing that people, if they're smart, like Minister Farrakhan or like Jones, become publishers, full out-and-out publishers. You're publishing essentially like an editorial column, like the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal.
And that'll afford you the certain rights and privileges that come with publishing and protection.
That's correct.
Until they change. This country is hard to know.
Well, the thing is, you have firmer ground to stand on. Well, we're out of time. But we can always return to it tomorrow and continue the discussion. Thanks so much, everyone, for calling in and listening. Really appreciate you being with us today. Bye-bye.